Hello, and welcome to Shadowbound, an all-new Wraith the Oblivion podcast. I'm Victor Kinzer, and I'm here with my co-host,
James Sembrano.
And we're going to be talking about the Wraith the Afterlife VR video game. This is a licensed World of Darkness product. It is licensed by Paradox Publishing, so they hold the World of Darkness license, and they are getting a bunch of other companies to put together products and games. And one of their early announcements was that there was going to be a Wraith virtual reality game. And the company that released this, the licensee, is Fast Travel Games. It's been out for a couple months now on Quest and PC. It recently came out on Steam, and there's supposed to be a PlayStation VR release later this year. There's still not a date on that one, but they haven't said they're not doing it. So fingers crossed for everyone out there with a PlayStation rig. So we're going to be diving into this game in detail. James, how are we going to be reviewing this game?
Well, we kind of broke it down into three main categories you want to look at. The first one being that this is just a good old ghosty game. Ooh, that we're going to calculate whether or not it's a good horror game. And then, of course, because, you know, we're big World of Darkness nerds and fans, that we also want to talk about, is it actually a good Wraith the Oblivion game? Does it represent the source material well? And the final category we wanted to look at was, like, you know, in the vein of all the other World of Darkness games that either have come out or are planned to come out, like, does it fit into that really well? Does it seem like it's a good part of that whole expanded universe? I also wanted to add, because I feel like it's an important note, that Victor and I actually haven't had the opportunity to play this game. What we've done is watch a lot of other people play it. And I think it's an important thing to talk about also, because I kind of feel like it's a little bit of a miss that it is only for VR. It's only for the Oculus, because it's really limiting the audience in a lot of ways. And I know that Paradox's ideas behind a lot of these video games aren't, like, they want to make the video games that are fun to play, but they also are really interested in getting people excited about the World of Darkness as a whole. And that kind of, like, limits it a lot. We got a lot out of watching other people play it, but I wish we could have both played this before talking about it. I wish we had that opportunity.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I have to say, I tried to get a setup to play this game. I don't really have a computer where I can justify an Oculus. I didn't want to get Quest set up, but we do have a PlayStation 5. And so I went out and I scoured a good deal for the whole package Iron Man VR set, because I had found some websites that inaccurately reported a release date for the PSVR version. Mm-hmm. And I got it in time for that release date, and that was the Steam release date. They had mislabeled it.
So, oh no.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I wouldn't have bought that rig just for this game. We're playing other games on it. I don't feel like it wasn't worth buying, but I was still hoping to play this game before the review, and it just was not in the cards.
But either way, you know, let's go into talking about how this stands up as a horror game. Like, you and I are both horror game fans, and, you know, we have different kind of games I think we're looking at as comparisons to how to say if it stood up to these, like, legends. Like, we were talking about Silent Hill 2 before we started recording. I'm also, the whole time I was watching this, I can't stop thinking about a recent game that came out called Phasmophobia. So I'd like to mention that too when we get to it.
I definitely thought about Silent Hill 2 a lot. And it's funny, because with Silent Hill 2, I didn't play that game thinking ghosts and afterlife. But then you get to Silent Hill 3 and you pick up that note in the sewer. Mm-hmm. And, or not the sewer, in the subway, and suddenly all of Silent Hill 2 changes, and you realize, oh, he drowned himself before the game started, and, like, Maria, how she kept dying and coming back, suddenly takes on a different tenor, and a lot of that speaks to the way I think about Wraith. The other game that isn't exactly a horror game, but it's a horror game that I couldn't help but compare this to was Hellblade Senua's Saga, largely because when I played Hellblade, even though it's not really an afterlife game, the way they depicted her psychoses reminded me very much of The Shadow. I ended that game thinking, mm-hmm. This is what I want Shadow Play to be. And so I couldn't help but draw some parallels there. That said, the things they invested in that dynamic are completely unreasonable for any other studio to do.
Yeah.
So I want to be fair about that comparison.
Yeah, and like the reason I was thinking about Phasmophobia a lot is like, because even though you're a living character in Phasmophobia, you are ghost hunting, and so you have a lot of interactions with ghosts. Plus, there is scenarios where your character gets killed by a ghost, and you kind of walk around in a world that I would compare. I would say is essentially the Shadowlands. That is. And I feel like even though that game has a lot of development to do, it's in pre-release, like there's not a lot to do while you're in that state, but also that kind of ambiance and feel and like the whispering you hear in the background and the fact that you can't quite see things at the edges of your vision because it's just gone in shadow. Like I thought that was really powerful depiction of what it would like to be a ghost in the Shadowlands. You know, overall, I feel like that game is genuinely terrifying. It's also a game that is offered, you don't only have to play it in VR, but it is offered in VR, so that's another reason why I was thinking about it in comparison to this one. I personally would not quite say that this game was as scary as Phasmophobia, but it's more narrative driven than Phasmophobia is, so it has a lot more energy in creation put into the story and narrative than Phasmophobia does.
I would agree with that. It's also the thing I became very aware of. And to give, you know, some information to everyone on what we watched and what we're basing this review on, I watched the initial sort of teaser trailers from Fast Travel Games, and then I watched a full walkthrough from Wolf in VR, and we'll link that when we post this so you can kind of see what we're basing all this off of. And then James sent me some other links to a number of different people playing more of a sort of deep gameplay demo. And the thing I realized, especially once I saw those gameplay demos, is, you know, the times I played VR, the experience of it is totally different from watching it on the screen. Mm-hmm. Having to walk into the dark room, knowing there's probably a specter there and make the choice to do it, is where half of the fear comes from, even with normal like TV video games like Silent Hill or Hellblade or Phasmophobia. So I feel like this game is probably even scarier than I think it is because I haven't gotten to actually have to make those choices and be immersed in it.
I have no doubt that it's more terrifying than it feels to us watching it because, again, like I'm going to bring up Phasmophobia again because it was the biggest game I was thinking of in comparing this to, and I played a lot of it. I stream it, so I watch people play Phasmophobia and I'm like, ooh, jump scare. That's kind of frightening. But also a lot of time I'm kind of like laughing at people's reactions too, which is a lot of the joy that I get out of that game. But then when I play it, I'm like gritting my teeth and like trying not to piss myself. Like it's so scary sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, even though I've seen all of Wraith Afterlife, when it finally drops for PlayStation, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to play it. And I have a feeling it will still scare the ever-living crap out of me.
You know, that's you saying that, I think, is a good nod towards how I think we both feel about it. We're going to end up getting to some criticism of this game. But also, like, I think this is a World of Darkness video game that I would, you know, once I have a setup that's going to work appropriately for it, I have to decide whether or not my computer works with an Oculus. I just don't know if I want to buy an Oculus for one game. I want to, if I can find more than one game as being my reason to get the Oculus, I will get this game and play it. It looks good enough to play to me, which is not something I would say about every single World of Darkness game.
Maybe let's dive in a little deeper on what we really liked about Wraith Afterlife as a video game. For me, one of the biggest wins was the sound, which is also the reason I want to really play it, because I can tell the sound is amazing. Everyone says the sound is amazing, and I want it in my headset. Like, I can tell it's going to be more. And I really liked the design. When I first saw the house in early materials, I went, it's so clean. That's not the Shadowlands. But now that I've seen the whole playthrough, while it's not the Shadowlands as described in like the Wraith of Oblivion books, it's very atmospheric. It feels lived in. The mansion's definitely a character. It's intentionally a little simple and muted. I think they played some good tricks to deal with kind of the hardware limitations of Quest. But I thought the environments and the audio were really some of the biggest wins in this game.
I unquestionably agree about the audio, even though, like I said, we're coming from the perspective of not having played to get to have experienced the audio in quite the same way. You can tell the video that Victor mentioned, that I linked to him, it shows the people, the camera's on them while they're playing too and showing their like actual living reactions. And they'll do stuff like quickly like whip their head around, look behind them. So you can tell they're getting some really good creepy surround sound effects. You know, I also had the same reaction at first to the mansion being too nice looking, but all it took was for me to realize, well, two things. One, when they explained that the setting was a Hollywood mansion, like an actor's or a director's mansion, I was like, okay, you know, this actually does look like that to me. And also, like, you know, kind of the benefit of setting a Wraith game in, you know, the west of the US is that all of our architecture and stuff relatively to the rest of the world tends to be a little bit newer. So you can tell ghost games with, like, without the mansion that's falling apart and moldering. But also the other thing that I really ended up liking about it when I watched the playthrough about this mansion was that the hollowness and emptiness of it actually worked so well for me in feeling like I was, like, disconnected from the living, which that architecture does to me anyway, but in the context of a game about being dead, about being a ghost, like, really emphasized that, you know, I am not a living creature and I am living in a place that is also very devoid of what feels like a lived in experience.
Yeah, I really agree with that feeling, especially when you get into some of the later areas. Like, there's something about being in the movie theater inside the mansion, mm-hmm. which is, like, the most Hollywood thing imaginable. And you're just in it and it's a little bit wrecked, but it's just huge. And there's a weird loneliness, especially because at yes. that point you've kind of gotten to know the characters that live there. And I don't want to, like, spoil anything, but in very generic terms, they are lonely, isolated, unpleasant characters, which should surprise no one in a Wraith game. But, like, just being in this enormous movie theater and realizing there was probably never an actual group of people watching a film there collaboratively, yeah. like communally, it's a good setting. The mansion is a character, and I appreciated that a lot. So maybe we should get into how we actually feel about how the game progressed as a horror story. Still kind of thinking about it as a horror game. I felt like the tone they went for was kind of standard urban legend ghost story about, you know, someone that died. There's a mystery around the death. You have to unravel it. It spoke to me a lot about just urban ghost story legends I'd heard. And in that respect, I thought it tapped something that was very accessible and would probably let people get into the game that didn't know Wraith. And so as a video game, I thought that was a bit of a success. But I don't know that it got me all the way through the game. I felt like the story itself was a little two dimensional. I would have liked if it had opened up and there'd been a few more twists and maybe a little more character development later on to back up the horror. How did you feel about that?
I think my position sits really similar to yours, and I'm trying to think about how to explain this without giving out way too many spoilers. I don't want to go away with the spoilers, but yeah, opening into it, it's a really powerful way to start telling a race story. Like, the opening of it, I think, is a really good, like, here, let's start just talking about what it is to be a ghost. But I want to say, like, 2/3 into the story, I was literally tired of the story. I was, like, so, I don't want to say bored, but I was like, oh, like, are we just going to have another one of these, like, stressful conversations that's kind of adds to this background story? And I don't know. I kept watching it to, like, so I wanted to get to where the end was, and I was hoping for something big to happen at the end that would really, like, be like, oh, there's a really powerful twist, or, oh, there's finally a moment where they're, like, talking about, like, who the Death Lords are or something like that. I was hoping for something like that, and it never kind of really came through for me. And by the time I was at the end, I was tired of the story.
Yeah. I had a similar experience. And for me, there were really two aspects of that that stood out. The first one is the character you play. Again, I'll be very generic about this so as not to spoil
anything. Well, he's very generic, specific. So that's probably fine.
He's kind of a non-character. There is one other character in the game he cares about, but it's kind of obligatory. And I don't know how to describe this next thing without spoiling a little bit. I'm going to do my best. The biggest thing that happens with him, he doesn't end up having any agency around. And I just felt like it mm-hmm. took the impact out. I'll leave it at that. That's as unspoilery as I can be. But the other NPCs, you know, are real characters. So his lack of character is the biggest thing. The other thing is when you finally, like, find out what the horrible thing is, because it's a ghost story, you got to figure out what was the horrible thing, that why, you know, this, that, or the other ghost isn't at rest. That's not a big spoiler that that's a trope. It's really obvious.
Yeah.
It is very mid-century Hollywood. The story writes itself. Like, there's nothing revealing about it. If you were to be asked what is the most obvious thing to have happened in a mid-century Hollywood story, knowing nothing else other than what's the like most likely injustice in a mid-century Hollywood ghost story, you'd have a good chance of guessing it. That's my other big problem.
I feel like that was practically a spoiler in and of itself. And I know it technically wasn't, but it felt like it was.
You know, I don't know how else to address that. Like, it's enough of a problem. I feel like I have to address it. But yeah, it's hard to even like mention that and not spoil it. It's that on the face.
You're right, 100%. So yeah, the story was definitely a letdown. It had a good premise. That's what I want to give it. At a good premise. Okay, I want to add here. There's something about it that I actually think is a really excellent storytelling skill if you're going to tell a Wraith game. Maybe not skill, but you'll get what I'm saying. The idea, the concept of opening up with your newly dead Wraith players in a haunted house setting in which they have to explore why they ended up there, how they ended up being dead here, what's the mystery of like their Wraithly state, I think is a really excellent way to start telling a Wraith story if you're going to go, particularly if you're going to go into the tabletop game. It's a really good way. Like, Wraith is, in my opinion, the most, we might be able to argue about this because we're big nerds, but the most alien of the World of Darkness main splats. And because of that, it is sometimes really challenging to figure out where to start with it when you're telling a story. And I think that opening up your premise of being just like a mystery of how you died in a haunted house, like a la the Bly House series, in which, you know, again, let's try not to be too spoiler here because anyone hasn't seen this show, it's a year old, but you know, it, you slowly unravel why people are there and how they got into their current state of living or undeadness, you know, like, so I think that the way that they kind of set up the beginning of this game, as when you're looking at it from the perspective of a storyteller, it's actually, they're giving you a great tool that you can work with. And then again, like, I am on the same page as Victor. Like, the way that it ends up unraveling is very disappointing, but the opening, I think, is very, very strong.
Yeah, I agree with you that the premise is fantastic. The thing that was interesting about this game, because as I watched it, I thought, okay, is this a good representation of Wraith? And there are places where it deviates from Wraith a lot, but some of them I'm glad it deviates. I kind of agree with you that Wraith is the most alien game, but the weird thing about Wraith is it's also kind of the most not alien game in that it's all about you and your passions and loss and these things that are very human and we all feel all the time and we're always kind of running away from because they're uncomfortable. But there's that, and then there's these like weird surreal things that have been alive since the Roman era and this impossible non-Euclidean architecture and this cosmology that no one actually understands how things relate to each other, which were all done to give this alien ambiance. And the thing I've heard consistently, people struggle with which of these games am I running? Because they feel like two totally different games. And I kind of like that Afterlife took a premise that focused on the intimate. I may have wished that intimate story had been built a little differently, but it did focus on the part of the game that I think makes sense to start with. And there's some hooks that maybe you'll get into the more complicated stuff at the end, but I do agree with you. I like the premise. To kind of segue further into, is it a good Wraith game? I wish I knew what this guy's passions were. I don't.
We can talk about, you know, what in the game stood out as being like, oh, we can see it, this is Wraith. And like, passions basically don't exist, which is central to the whole theme of the game. You do open up pretty early with a fetter, though. I think it's your father's camera. Is that correct?
Yes, your father's camera. But it's weird because it then behaves sort of like a relic. So it's a thing you can use as a Wraith in an ongoing manner. So it's kind of a fetter. It's
both. Can they be both in the game? I actually don't recall.
Something can't be a relic until it's destroyed. So a fetter can't, when a fetter is destroyed, it almost always becomes a relic. They can't be both at the same time.
So maybe, yeah. So maybe the better in-game way to look at that is it is a relic that was once a fetter, which, you know, again, is a missed opportunity to be a good Wraith game. You could have talked about how that potentially disconnected our main character from the living world by having that destroyed to be able to use it. Like, there was a good opportunity there that they didn't use.
There was, you're right. That also makes me think about something you said before we started recording about how, and we probably get to this organically later, how maybe this all kind of feels a bit like a harrowing.
Oh, yeah.
What if it was the harrowing from that camera being destroyed, and that's why it's so central to the narrative?
That would have, okay. So we're going to have to back up for the listeners now, because you kind of obviously talked a little bit about what we're going to talk about before we recorded. Like, Victor and I's kind of like consensus on the game was that it's like, we'll go into more details, but it wasn't the best representative of Wraith the Oblivion because it's missing so much of the source material, or it's so changed that it's unrecognizable. But I also threw out there the idea that if this were a harrowing, I thought it was actually really good because it also had kind of like the shadow play of the harrowing. Like, I spent a lot of time watching it trying to think, like, how is what they're using in this game translate into the actual setting material? And one thing I thought a lot about was how you constantly ran into like your memories that were like kind of just ghostly and somewhat interactable with, but not always. And I was like, what is this? And like, what kind of eventually came into my head was like, oh, it's like those shadow plays in a harrowing where like those are actually specters that are kind of messing with you by appearing as your memories. And I think when you look at it from that perspective, even though obviously like we're reaching because the game didn't say anything like that, it doesn't give you any idea that it's like that. When you look at it from that perspective of it being a harrowing, and I love your idea now because I didn't think of it before either, of it being a harrowing inspired by the destruction of your fetter, which becomes your camera, your relic camera. It's actually, that way of looking at it makes it work much better as a Wraith game.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that until you brought up the harrowing, but yeah, I think that's an interesting take on it. Yeah, it makes me think about that camera a lot more.
One of the other reasons I was thinking about it being a harrowing is because the opening of the game felt really off from Wraith to me, because you don't have the experience that, you know, a new Wraith has, which is like having one of the Reapers like remove your call from you and like either bring you willingly into Wraith society or often unwillingly, and, you know, waking up near the river. Like, that kind of whole aspect of this specific setting was just missing. And so I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, like, why is that happening? That's kind of where I landed on, was the harrowing. But, you know, I mentioned that because that is another place where I feel like it missed. Like, you know, early on, Victor, you mentioned that while the NPCs are pretty good, they don't have a lot of, like, powerful connection to you. And it would have been nice to see, like, a Reaper come and, like, interact with you and kind of explain what was going on with you. I did like, however, that gives me an opportunity to say I did love that they started out with your kind of like, I'm teaching you what the premise of the game is and how to play the game character is your shadow. That also disappointed both of us, though. Do you want to tell them why it disappointed us too?
This kind of gets back to something I said earlier, where the main character kind of isn't a character. He's showed up at this mansion and he was kind of invited to take pictures. That's not really a spoiler. You find that on very early on. The camera's a good, you know, reveal there. And that's kind of the end of it. He has a connection with a character he brings with him who is not really central to everything else that goes on with the other NPCs. So he doesn't really have a character. And so his shadow can't really have a character. The shadow is supposed to be your dark reflection, the passions you're too ashamed to admit, this whole Jungian dynamic there. And this shadow, it opens up where it's clear the shadow is going to be your tutorial mechanism, and they go for the like dark twisted voice, like I am clearly evil approach, which is a viable approach to the shadow. Since they have him help you, I would have liked if he'd been a bit more ambiguous early on and you discovered, oh no, I can't trust this voice later. And just like, it was a really, really cool premise. But as much as I don't know what the main character's passions are, I know what the shadow's dark passions are even less. Like, yeah. His passions are explaining the world to you and then being like, ha ha, I manipulated you at the end. But manipulated you to what? I still don't really know. Yeah, there was a lot of potential there that I felt like never really fully manifest.
Yeah, you know, like, at first, I was sure it was going to happen because I saw, oh, tutorial voice is your shadow. They're going to betray you. What better tool in a game to betray you with than tutorial voice? Because no one is thinking that's coming. It's supposed to be completely like beneficial to you playing the game. And I was like, this is gonna be so great. And then and it never happened. And it was just never there. Honestly, you know what? We were talking about our rating system for, was it a good horror game? If it had something like one thing that might give a game a 5 out of 5 would be if it had something kind of like new and revolutionary in the way it portrayed the horror. And if they portrayed the horror to us with our tutorial voice betraying us and sending us to our doom, I might've been willing to go that far.
I would have really liked that. I think that these dynamics speak to another really broad structural problem with the game. And that was you interact with memories of what happened around the death and the ghost mystery. But they're all memories of what happened when everyone was still alive. You never actually interact with another spirit other than the specters, which are good jump scares. They're good, like, oh, I have to walk into something that's uncomfortable and is going to kill me. And like a lot of the video game horror we were praising earlier is in the specter dynamics. They were good, inventive, non-combat action approaches to creating suspense. I think they did it really well, but none of them are characters. They're all very clearly Mort White, just like simplest, non-social specter interaction. And because you never actually interact with anyone as a character, nothing really organically develops. You know, when I think about the shadow dynamics, I would have loved it if it hadn't just been, I got to get out of this place. If it had been, there's some things going on and maybe people I want to help. And, you know, maybe people I secretly kind of want to hurt. And you had some of the dynamics from like Silent Hill and other games in that genre where you have like good ending, bad ending, horrid ending. If there'd been some of that branching, and there were moments where, like, if you saw a certain flash of darkness, you could hit a button and get a boost, sort of like a systematized shadow dice kind of thing, but that fed the shadow. And maybe if that got too high, if you let your angst get too high, you just sort of black out. And then if you black out, you then find out, oh, I did things. You know, we don't need to play through catharsis, just something. And I mean, maybe not that exact way. Like, it's easy to say, oh, I would have designed XYZ, but just something to represent angst and passions. And like, I want things I don't want to admit I want. That was all just absent because there was no actual interaction. It was all just reliving memories.
To me, the most powerful aspects of why Wraith the Oblivion is a excellent mind fuck of a game all revolved around like the different kind of mechanics that deal with your emotional state as a dead creature who is becoming more and more disconnected from being a person. And that includes things like passion, like you mentioned, and it includes your interaction with the shadow and all the shadow mechanics. And that just doesn't exist in this game. It's just, it's not part of it. And so this game is, to me, missing the most important part of Wraith the Oblivion. The other thing that I think it almost touched on, but missed out on an opportunity to really describe what the actual source material was you spend everything but like the first few moments of the game for the most part in the Shadowlands. I guess there's arguably some other points of the game where you fall into certain parts, but it's really hard to say. And even with the opening of the game, the only thing I can say is I know it's not the Shadowlands. I don't know if it's like the outskirts of Stygia. I don't know if it's like what they think it looks like to walk through a Tempest, or like the paths to the Tempest call. There's a specific word for that.
The byways.
The byways. If that's what
it
maybe...
It could be a byway. I mean, it's not watery, but the watery is just one metaphor. They take all sorts of forms.
Right.
The Stark could be a byway. I could see that.
The fact that you and I are having to guess at what this maybe like 2 minutes of gameplay were that wasn't set in the Shadowlands is like what I'm saying about how they just, the rest of the setting isn't even really touched on.
I agree with that. And I think, you know, to speak to what you said earlier about you were waiting for that moment where like, and then the Death Lords and explaining things. I think there's an argument to be made for leaving a lot of that stuff out in the name of making the game more accessible. And we've talked about this before. All the weird meta plot of Wraith makes the game hard to absorb, especially early on. That said, I feel like they were a little too stingy. Like, you replenish pathos by finding Polaroids, and it's always the same Polaroid. And I think it's of the main specter. I think that's who it's a Polaroid of, which left me going, why does this not give me angst? Like,
yeah.
If I buy that this is full of emotional energy, how is it pathos? You know, and it wouldn't have been too difficult to say, all right, it's a video game. You're running down a corridor because it's a video game RPG. We accept that. But we're on the corridor going to leave places for you to fulfill your passions. And that's when you get pathos back. And you could still put it at the same sort of cadence as those Polaroids. It would take a lot more design, just from an artifact design standpoint. And I recognize there's cost there. But I would have liked to have seen something along those lines. And even with some of the weirdness in the meta plot, I would have liked a little something, a somewhat more explicit tease at the end.
Yes.
And there's like, not, at least, even at the
least
end.
Then, at least yeah. then. At least then it could have been like, boom, now you fall into Stygia. Look at this awesome undead city. Credits roll. Like, that much would have been enough for me to feel like this is more of a Wraith game.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're explicitly setting this post sixth great maelstrom and there is no Stygia. If this exists somewhere yeah. in the canon, that wouldn't shock me given their goals. But I still feel like something, like some hook of, you know, when you escape an Anacreon or a guild, or like seeing someone who's clearly used Moliate or something. But it's just like, at the end, it's just, okay, cool, we're done now.
Yep. Yeah, the yeah. ending is great. Yeah. We said that, it's true.
And I mean, that said, there are some aspects that show up. Fetters are one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we sort of speculated about the camera, that we have to guess and stretch a little, but there is a point where you destroy the fetters of one of the specters to banish them. The way you destroy them is a little quirky, or at least the way you destroy one of them is a little quirky, but it's just kind of like, oh, it's a fetter. It binds them here. If you destroy them, they'll go away. It felt obligatory to me. I don't know. How did you feel about that sort of tie-in to the broader Wraith world?
I mean, I was glad that it was included as like a way to deal with them, because that is a way. That is like, you know, basically killing a Wraith or a Spectre, either version, like it doesn't work very well. You could do it a lot and over time you might get somewhere. But for the most part, they just come back and come back and come back. So, you know, the lore way to deal with them, the most effective way to deal with them, and if you want to dig into like the broader world of darkness, like kind of knowledge of the inter-sphere interactions, like the Giovanni clan, who are part of the Hecate now, I think in fifth, are renowned for collecting these fetters because that's what they use to control their Wraith servants. You know, like I was glad it was included, but also it was kind of weird the way they handled yeah. it.
It was also kind of one of those things where there are several specters in the game, but only one specter with fetters. And it's like, yeah. well, if they don't have fetters, they can't bind themselves here. And I'm just like, why haven't we been doing this for all of these specters this whole time? It's just little things.
I just told myself that all of them, for some reason that we don't know, had the mansion as a fetter. And so that's why you had to deal with them.
That's a fair take. But again, we're having to fill that narrative
yeah,
in.
Yeah, we're speculating and filling it in.
Yeah, to someone who doesn't know Wraith and is just basing it off the little hooks in the game, it's hard to paint a whole picture.
Yeah, it's an obvious hole if you're like looking at the system. So that's one of the downsides to it. So like, yeah, almost good, you know, almost a check mark in the positive, but kind of neutral in the end.
I would agree with that.
Do you want to talk about where it stands with the other right. World of Darkness games at all? I'm still including the original Bloodlines in this estimation. And I think it's important to include that one because I feel like even though there's plenty of like criticism of it, by and large, the fan base says it was an excellent game, right? Like that's a yeah. that's a very widely accepted, like good depiction of vampire, despite some criticisms. And I would say it's possible that my feelings about the way you become a Wraith in this and the way that's introduced are overcritical, because the way that you become a vampire in the original Bloodlines is ridiculous. Just like, you know, you never know your sire and you're immediately put on this execution stage and then all of a sudden you're serving the prince. Like, when would that actually happen in Vampire? The prince, first of all, probably would never let you live. Like, that whole I'll let you live scenario probably would never happen. Whatever the Anarch said, the Anarchs wouldn't even be invited to court. I don't want to go too deep into an old game. What I mean to say is the fact that the way you get introduced into being a Wraith doesn't really fit the way I perceive it would happen commonly in game, maybe isn't the worst thing in the world, because people liked Bloodlines and it was pretty bad in that. But I can't really make any other comparisons between this game and Bloodlines, because it does not have the same rich level of like, let's interact with what all of like the other races are doing in the world and make that a storyline. There's no other race really. There's just Spectres. After the opening there, you just can't make a Bloodlines comparison. So no, I wouldn't compare it to Bloodlines being a very good game. However, our first dealings with Wraith the Oblivion in a video game does happen in Bloodlines in the mansion. I can't remember what the whole name of that mansion is, but it's like the second big quest. Like you go into like the Wraith mansion.
Yeah.
And I honestly feel that there were times where I feel like the Wraith mansion, which was made more than 20 years ago, was more Wraithly than this game. You know,
yeah, it's been a long time since I played original Bloodlines, but I do remember that quest, and yeah, that's an accurate read.
It was also creepy, so like it still had a good horror element. It was probably the scariest part of that whole game to me. Like, I would not qualify most of the original Bloodlines to be a horror game. It is. But it's not really like a jump scary kind of like, oh man, I'm freaked out. Like what's around the next corner kind of game. It's a little bit more of an action RPG. But the moments when you are scared are almost entirely in that mansion. You got a good sense for when the shadow was taking over that Wraith that's attacking you. And so like the fact that I look at that game as being like potentially a better depiction of Wraith when it was made 20 years ago and was a vampire game is not, you know, it's not great. When it comes to narrative, I actually think that Heart of the Forest is the best narrative I've ever seen in a World of Darkness game, and this doesn't come close. There's almost no narrative. I would compare his name's Ed, right?
Yes, Ed.
Mm-hmm. The most boring name possible. Sorry, any Eds out there, but it only has two letters. Ed felt to me a lot like Kyle did in Earthblood, and that the game designers we're just like, let's make a blank slate character that anyone feels like they can be so that they can dive into this world and get introduced from it. But instead of it being like, oh, like I feel like I fit into this character so easily because it's a blank slate, it just feels like there's just a hollow nothing there that you're not attached to instead. And so it's a miss. Like I get what they're going for, but it's still a miss. Plus, I'm me, sorry. So I'm also going to say, I'm really bored by your blank slate characters that everyone can get into the mindset of being white dudes. Like, it's so, I'm so tired of it. Just the fact that in Heart of the Forest, your character is a white woman, I was already like 1,000 times more invested in this constant parade of the same white dude that I'm supposed to like, be like, it's easy for me to pretend I'm this character because it's not. It's just boring. So that's my feeling on that. I had to throw something out there about that. I also really hated his arm tattoo that looked like a heartogram from him to me. It wasn't, but it looked so much like when I was like, wait, I stopped the video to be like, it's a him. It's a dead him fan. Anyway. Yeah,
I agree on the tattoo. Like I wanted, as big as that tattoo was, I wanted it to mean something and it didn't.
I could have.
The death marks. The death marks were rad. Were great. They were rad. Yes. The tattoo... pointless. I didn't understand. It was pointless.
I honestly think the tattoo was like edgy. This is the image of the World of Darkness, like gothy, weird symbols. But like also the point of the World of Darkness is that all that shit actually means something. So like you can't just stop there. And it really did look like a heartogram.
It did. It looked exactly like a heartogram. And I think that whole goal of having the blank, anyone can read themselves into this character model, I get what the point of that is. I completely agree with you on like generic white guys, done, don't need it anymore. But in Wraith specifically, you can't have a generic character and like to use just like ridiculously like blatant terminology and finish your stat sheet. You can't even have a generic Wraith stat sheet. You have to have real passions, real fetters, real emotions, a shadow that's a reflection of like your specifics. I'm not a big fan of that model in general. If you're a character in a significant story, you should play a significant role in it. But in Wraith, even more, it just breaks down core infrastructure of what makes Wraith work.
the source material for all the World of Darkness video games is a tabletop role-playing game. And the reason people get into tabletop role-playing games and enjoy and love them is because of the way that you play a central role in the story and how much your character's backstory and personality and interaction with the story matters, because that's all that matters for the most part. Like, you do have this big grand meta plot in the background, but that's what it is. It's background dressing. It's not the most important thing. The most important thing is, what is your character doing within that background dressing? And again, I'll make another original Bloodlines comparison, because one of the things that people loved about it was, not only did you have, you know, basically a different kind of character for each clan, you didn't have character customization in that sense, but you did have a different kind of character. But also, with the patch that literally everyone plays it with, I know it's not part of the basic game, but I don't know anyone who plays without this patch. You also have a whole bunch of background options that detail like some points of who your character was in life and gives you like a little bit of an advantage, a little bit of disadvantage somewhere. And that's all you got to do in these kinds of games. Like, give the players of the World of Darkness video games some ability to customize and personalize. This has to be as much as it is in a tabletop game, but some ability to customize and personalize your character, because that's why people like these games. When you remove it completely and leave this hollow shell of a white man, my pause there is intentional because I'm kind of like laughing at myself, but when you have this hollow shell of a white man, it's just, it's boring. Like, I don't know anyone who thinks Kyle was any kind of compelling character. And I'm going to assume that after a lot of the reviews of Wraith, especially fan reviews of Wraith Afterlife come out, no one's even remember Ed's name. That's how, like, when I asked you, Victor, to confirm that it was Ed's name, I think you hesitated because you weren't sure.
It took me a second. And I'll be honest, the only reason I remember his name is because the shadow uses it to taunt you so many times.
Oh, right.
I had to stop and think, did I hear his name? And then I heard it in the voice of the shadow and I went, Ed, yes. But I didn't remember like how that name was significant in the story.
It's just a nothing character. Ed and Kyle are both the same kind of, the project developers had the same thinking about why they were made that way.
Maybe it makes sense to kind of go in and talk about our conclusions a little bit and do some rankings. Kind of final conclusion at a high level, you know, as much as we did spend a fair bit of time ripping on this as a Wraith game, I do still like it as a horror game. I feel like it's worth picking up unless you just are really jonesing for a true Wraith the Oblivion game, and then maybe don't.
You got to like find the other three people who play the role-playing game to sit at a table with you. We're going to make a whole podcast about this game that three people love. So,
oh God, it's true. But yeah, at like a high level conclusion, what's your take on the game and how worth picking up it is?
I do think it looks like a really fun horror game. I would put it like, I would not put it even close to like something like Silent Hill 2 or the original Resident Evil or anything like that. But I would put it maybe like a bit under, not too much, but a bit under Phasmophobia for how much the horror gameplay, like the fun of the horror gameplay looks. And so I would say, if you have the VR rig, if you have the Oculus, I think it's worth picking up. If you don't, if you aren't willing to invest in that, or if that's the only reason you invest in it, do not pick it up.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So then we had kind of three categories we wanted to give it a numeric ranking on from 1 to 5. The first one, is it a good horror video game? I think it won't come as a surprise to anyone. This is probably our highest ranking.
Yep. I put 4 out of 5, and it was explicitly because between 3 and 4, I had to think about it. But like, because of the way I saw that the sound made people like live playing it and recording themselves playing it, like jump and look over their shoulders and like dive out of things they thought were coming over their heads and stuff, the sound alone is why it got to a 4 for me.
Yeah, I give it a 4 as well for very much the same reason. The only thing that really keeps this from being a 5, because the gameplay itself does look really fun, is the story. If they'd put a little more time into scripting and done the exact same lift on game development, this would probably been a 4.5 or a 5 for me, to speak to how fun it looked. So then, as a Wraith game, where would you put it?
I gave it a 2. When I was looking for Wraith the Oblivion elements, it just wasn't enough. The reason I didn't give it a 1, I'll tell you why. There's one specific thing that pushed it up to a 2 for me, and it was, I loved the mechanic they use for using Niles to walk between walls and stuff like that. That was cool. That felt so Wraithly to me. That made me feel like this was a Wraith game, but that was it. That was really what pushed it up to a 2 from a 1 for me. Otherwise, it was like, it's a good ghost game, but is it a Wraith game?
Yeah, I ended up with pretty much the same rating. I mean, too. I can't really justify much higher or lower. I also really liked the Nihil dynamics. The other thing that does kind of make it a decent Wraith game for me is the way they explained Spectres. I didn't like that all the Spectres were just full-on Mortwhite, shock and awe horror. I would have liked some doppelganger subtlety, but their explanation of like, you've had this horrible thing happen to you and now you just want to make everyone feel as empty as you feel, and the backstories they gave them, because all the Spectres do get a backstory for how they died. I felt like that was the most interesting thing they did. But at the end of the day, so much else was missing. I can't justify more than a 2. In terms of how it falls as a World of Darkness game in the increasing umbrella of World of Darkness video games specifically that we have now, where would you put it?
I inched it up to a 3, which I'm almost concerned is just me commenting on other games. It really isn't, though. I inched up to a 3 because I would say the fact that it was such an excellent horror game, even though it's not specifically about the meta of the World of Darkness, it is giving us an element of the way the World of Darkness should feel that I think was pretty up there compared to most of them. Definitely better than Coteries of New York, which I don't feel like did a great job of like giving you like the overall World of Darkness feel. It didn't have any ambient horror to it for the most part. Just the power of the ambient horror in this, I was like, yeah, I'll give this a 3 because it really feels like this is the World of Darkness to me, just because I am so scared watching people play it.
Yeah, I've got to give it a little bit less. Like, I'd give it like a 2.5. And
okay.
I don't disagree with any of what you described there. The reason I go a little bit lower is, for me, the fundamental thing for the World of Darkness is personal horror. Like, that's always been the sales pitch. And there is no person there to experience personal horror. Like, he doesn't exist. He's a walking avatar. And so, you know, at no point could I even experience any existential dread about my place in this horrible world. It's the only thing that keeps it disconnected for me. In terms of ambiance and mood and tone, I agree with you. It's a really good entry, but I need the character to be a character for it to be World of Darkness.
Yeah, seeing as that out of all the games that have come out, and obviously one is really old and has more time and all the others are newer, but still, well, actually there's more than one that's really old. There's a couple that are really old. Bloodlines has that massive fan base. And like I said, like, because you have like more personality in the character you can choose, because you have more ability to make that your character, because you have more ability to modify that character's growth, even to like be your own unique character by the end of the game. That's missing from games like this one and Earthblood especially. And it's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
One last thing that popped into my head before we talked about, so I'm going to surprise you with this one. Did you see anything in this game that gave you hopes or thoughts or conspiracy theories about what we're going to see in Wraith 5th edition?
Did I? Well, the one thing I would say that I think this game, if it's a reflection of the direction they want to take Wraith in, which it likely is with everything they've said.
I'm certain it is in some way.
Yeah. I think the one thing that this really absolutely gives us is we're likely to see a much more local Wraith game and a much less Deathlords, wild, surreal architecture. I have a feeling it's those two games I described earlier, we're just going to get a heavy skew towards the personal. Maybe this overrepresented that. I don't know if the actual Wraith 5th will go that far, but I feel like that's absolutely confirmed given the way this game played out. Do you agree with that?
I do, and I tricked you into using that to lead into our outro. So this was our review of Wraith the Oblivion Afterlife, and we really hope you enjoyed it and you found the review useful. And when you join us again, hopefully either next or soon, one of our upcoming episodes, we specifically want to talk about how to run the localized part of Wraith and how to make that like the central part of your game and just focus on like what's going on with the local Wraith City community. So hope to see you next time. This has been Shadowbound. I'm James. That's Victor. Bye.
Bye.